And we are good to go. Okay. All right. It's Monday after the weekend of course, the AFC and NFC championship games. We don't do a lot of NFL here, but we will just because it's a hot topic of the day. Mike just texted me. In fact, we were going to open up with just a review of what happened. You're a Buffalo guy because you're from there, so I'd love to talk to you. But here's a question. Was there a spot gate in the Chiefs Buffalo Bills game? Yes, there was. Now, to me, it was the last one. There was a few sections of the game where I left the room for a while, let's say. But the last one was, to me, they go for it on fourth down. Josh Allen reaches over the top of the pile. He's way up on top of the pile. And the referee at the top of the TV screen comes down the line in first down territory. And the referee on the bottom half of the screen inside the line by just inches apart. And, of course, they go to a lengthy review. They come back and give the ball to Kansas City. Now, the initial call apparently was Kansas City gets the ball because they didn't say – There must not have been enough to overturn that call.
Yeah, the initial call, they said he was short. But as you said, the guy from the top, you know, I'm looking at the TV screen, let's just say. The linesman from the top of the TV screen, a guy who apparently has 23 years of NFL experience and has the best view, I think, of the play because Allen's jumping and he's turned 90 degrees sideways. So he's facing this referee. This referee can see where the ball is. He comes in and I think the first down was at the 40.
Yeah.
He's coming in at about the 39 and two-thirds.
Exactly.
Clearly a first down. Then the other guy comes in from the bottom half of your TV screen.
Yeah.
And he's about at the 40.
Same distance, but on the other line.
Yeah, but he can't see the ball.
Right.
Because Allen has the ball, and unless he can see through Josh Allen, which would be, to me, news.
Now
he can't see the ball.
Did you think that Allen dropped it though?
No, that was on a different one. This was with like 8 minutes ago.
Yeah,
this
the last one.
Yeah, with all the controversy, but I don't think he dropped it. And I mean, Gene Steratore up there, he's going, I'm looking at this, and that's a first down. Tony Romo, that's a first down.
Yeah.
You look at the above, that's a first down. And you know, I admit I am biased. I wanted the Bills to win, but I'm just gonna ask you this. If I said before the game, there is going to be one 50-50 call, which decides the game.
Yeah.
Which team is going to get that call?
I mean, we went into last week's game with everybody saying that Kansas City was getting...
The Chiefs were going to get the call.
Yeah, that Kansas City was being favored. Now, these things can't be proven, and as Doc and I talk about it all the time, it's like, well, okay, but do they get together and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, or is it just kind of in their brain to go, I don't think that
I don't think they get a directive from the NFL.
No,
and when it happens week after week after week after week.
I know.
Jethro Gibbs, I don't know what rule number it is from NCIS, you know. Rule number 7, there are no coincidences.
I know.
And every player in the NFL knows it. I guess I saw a story today. There's like tweets from various NFL players that during, you know, at that point and about during the game that, you know, they're all going, well, here we go. You know, they all know they called a face mask on a Bills defensive back and his hand is like on top of the guy's helmet.
Ah.
Not even anywhere near the face mask.
And then no fingers curling anywhere.
No. So, you know, Buffalo did not make enough plays to win the game. I was disappointed afterwards, but I learned a lot. 10 years ago or so, I just had to say, I can't let this ruin my life.
No, it's like, it's easy, you can't.
And they had a chance at the end of the game. Dalton Kincaid, an excellent tight end, former player from Utah. Josh Allen just makes an unbelievable play.
Yeah.
Backpedaling, and he, you know, you think it's just a Hail Mary, but he throws it, and the guy's wide open.
Yeah.
And it's in his hands, and he drops it. So
I did not want Kansas City to go back.
I did not either. I did not.
I really wanted Buffalo, and I forgot about
you. I wanted the Commanders, too, just for somebody different. But, you know,
me too.
Philadelphia's playing at another level right now. So.
Well, especially Barkley. I mean, here's a guy, they're talking about him. Every time he's scored so many times in the playoffs, and he's just could not be hotter. And the first time he touches the ball, he not only reels off a 60-yarder, but he had to work for it. After he initially had wide lanes, he got three guys wrapped up around him that completely gagged on it, and he did a nice little juke move that was just, whoa, he broke their ankles, and then he ran in untouched. Yeah, it was beautiful.
I'm really happy for him, and I think the best thing about the yesterday for Saquon was the end of the game when the Eagles were way up, and the Shipley kid, the backup, the third string running back from Clemson was in and ripped off a couple of big runs and finally scored a touchdown. I mean, Barkley was more excited than when he scored. He came out on the field and was hugging the guy. And to me, that shows, like, you're a great teammate.
Yeah.
That it's not just about you.
I can tell you it was a lot easier to root for Philadelphia a few years ago when Isaac Seumalo was a right tackle. But he's been with Pittsburgh for a couple of years now. So that's gone. You lose because you grew up in Buffalo, that's gone.
But the Eagles aren't – I mean, I don't think the Eagles are bad guys. You never hear about Jalen Hurts getting trouble. Barkley, you know, talk about escape from New York, you know. he finally gets away from probably the most dysfunctional football
franchise. And how did they let him go?
They couldn't – they didn't want to spend the money to sign him. And then he left. So, you know what? Good for him. It's but now comes the two-week slog.
Yeah,
2 weeks of just nonsense.
I know.
And I won't. I mean, I'll watch the game because it's the Super Bowl, but I won't have anything invested. I don't know who's the. I mean, you know, I'm an old guy shaking my fist at clouds. You know, halftime entertainment by what's his name?
Kendrick Lamar,
somebody like
Kendrick,
that.
Kendrick Lamar is his name.
I have no idea what.
Is he the one?
I guess. Yeah, but
I don't know anything about.
I don't know anything. But I'm not supposed to. They're not marketing for years,
Brooks Hatch, by the way, joining me here. I'm John Warren. This is the Joe Beaver Show.
This is the curmudgeon-o.
Yeah, this is. The get off my lawn, guys. Two of the worst at it. Mike's gone until Thursday. We won't have a show on Wednesday, and it'll be Brooksy and myself today and tomorrow. By the way, tomorrow, Roxy Bernstein will join us. He has the call. I don't know who he's working with, but he has the call tomorrow of the Gonzaga Beaver men's basketball game, and we'll get Mike on. So Mike and Roxy tomorrow, Brooksy and myself today and tomorrow, and your texts and phone calls, and we encourage them all. The phone calls are brought to you by the Downward Dog, and that line is 541-497-5356. Same phone number, different sponsor for the text line, the University Honda text line, 541-497-5356. And we love to get your texts, and we love to take things on and have you chime in on a few things. So today I thought we would just kind of recap the weekend of sports, which of course was the two playoff games and two Beaver games over the weekend. So we'll talk about that in this first segment and then come back with a deeper dive in basketball. And at some point in this show today, I don't even know where or when we can do anything we want, but I want to play a couple of interviews for you, at least a good couple of minutes from each one. From baseball, because a week ago was baseball's media day, because it was Thursday, and then Friday was the first day of practice for everybody around the country, and we're just around the corner from baseball season. And on basketball, I thought, all right, let's take a look at this net rankings. And I'm telling you, you know, the Beavers are at 54 right now, Brooksy. We won't do it right now, but we'll get into it later. But there's a lot of schools that are from the Pac-12 conference. From just a year ago, Utah, Cal, Stanford, behind Oregon State right now in those net rankings. And the net rankings are nowhere close to the AP rankings. Oregon is 15th in the AP, 27 in net. Now, they just suffered their first loss. I believe it was in... their first road loss.
Yeah, at Minnesota.
Right, road loss at Minnesota.
The worst team in the Big Ten.
One of the worst teams in the Big Ten. And they suffered that loss. So anyway, we'll take a look at that, break it down. I have a few thoughts on some of those things. And anything else you want to chime in on, the number, of course, 541-497-5356. Do you have any family left in Buffalo?
No. My parents moved to Florida in 2001. My dad was by then 75 or something. And just couldn't do the snow work and all that stuff. And, you know, when you get older, you don't like cold weather. And my older brother, he moved away at like 19. He does not like cold weather. He's moved away and never looked back. Florida and Texas. And he's back quite a bit, but in the summer.
Yeah.
And my younger brother, he moved away about 3 years after he was done with college. And he lives down by New York City, a little city called Mayapack, New York.
So most of your family's on the other side.
I have no family. I mean, in Buffalo anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, all my family's on the East Coast.
And so it must be your wife's family, Margie and Margie, in Wyoming.
Well, her family used to be in Rapid City, but both her parents passed within the last 2 years.
Okay. So,
but she did, yeah, she went to the University of Wyoming. Her mom
and
grew
you,
up
you
in Laramie.
You still have a cabin there?
We have a cabin there in a little town called Centennial, about 30 miles outside of Laramie. So, yeah, we're big University of Wyoming fans. And
I don't know about you, but it's fun because in sports, for some reason, you remember little things. And so I had a friend in school, and I see him every time we have a reunion. Great friend, but, you know, we don't chat outside of that. Ross Hoffman, big Bills fan when we were in 10th grade 40-something years ago. So I'm watching Buffalo. I can't help but think of Ross Hoffman.
Yeah.
And you. I thought of both because you're the only two actual longtime Buffalo Bills fans that I know.
He was probably a OJ fan. That's how he got to
work with the Bills. We're a little young for that. We were probably in 4th, 5th, 6th grade when OJ was was there at Buffalo. He may have been. I don't know. I didn't really come of age in sports until 6th grade. Was it the Dolphins and the Raiders in the Super Bowl that year?
Well,
1976.
Let's see. That was my first year in college. I thought that was like the Steelers and somebody.
It could have been.
I don't know.
I'm way off, but I could be off. But yeah, I remember Howard Twilley for the Dolphins and making a bunch of big plays. Anyway, so I was thinking of you yesterday with Buffalo. Their stadium, has it been the same since you were a kid?
No, when I was growing up, there was a stadium called War Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
It's where The Natural was filmed.
Oh, so that was for football and baseball?
Football and baseball.
Okay,
and then they built what I still call Rich Stadium.
Yeah,
where they're playing now, Highmark Stadium.
Yeah.
That opened in 73, and they are building a new stadium right now, which will open in 2026.
Next to
it?
Right
next to the old one.
With the dome?
No, it does not have a dome.
Good.
But it's going to look like one of those Premier League stadiums. If you follow English soccer, where the roof does come out and cover the grandstand.
Kind of like Joe Robbie Stadium.
Yeah,
has now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Huh?
But it's not going to be a dome. So, you know, you got to play outside. That's real football.
What's the town? I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank.
Orchard Park.
Orchard Park. Yeah. I have met one human being from Orchard Park.
Yeah, I grew up like 7 miles away from Orchard Park. You just take it's Quaker Road. You take that right into East Aurora.
So I'm 20 years old. I'm at a pre-marriage party, and Grandma from New York is in town from my best friend. She's from Orchard Park, and she doesn't know anything about sports. But I start peppering with questions because Orchard Park, that's the Buffalo Bills. And you just start, you know, going in on it.
Yeah, I'm sure she knows about that because on game days, Orchard Park turns, you know, from this little sleepy little city to, you know, there's 80,000 or 70,000 people. There's a few people what I call the, I'm going to mispronounce the word. It's diaspora
mm-hmm.
of Western New York, you know, like flowers when they, like a dandelion.
Boom. Yeah, yeah.
Because so many people have left Western New York when the economy went bad. But yeah, there's a few Bills fans out here. My friend Mike, he's from Clarence. He's a real big Bills fan.
Clarence. So weather wasn't a factor for either of the two games. I'm not overly excited about this Super Bowl, but I'll hope to get to it.
And it's going
to
be in a dome too, isn't it?
It's in the Superdome. Yes.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, artificial light. It's going to be, and not till
it's funny too.
9:30 at night Eastern time or whenever they're going to start it.
3:30, so 6:30.
Yeah, I mean, remember when the Super Bowl used to start at like 1 o'clock?
Yeah,
in the afternoon,
and you're right about the light thing because every arena and dome has different lighting that you see on TV. And one of the worst I've always felt was one of the darkest and grimmest and worst was the Superdome.
It's the Superdome, yeah.
The lighting in there is awful compared to other domes.
Yeah.
So you're right. That's going to be, and it'll be 2 weeks from now. We've moved on.
You know, it'll be the old touchdown, extra point commercial.
Yeah,
kickoff commercial.
You're right, though. It is,
but
it is football, and we'll watch
football,
it for sure.
Last game of the year.
Yeah, we'll watch it.
I'll probably skip the Pro Bowl skills contest.
I'll skip anything Pro Bowl nowadays. The last Pro Bowls we got into was when we were 11, 12 years old, they actually played a game, and they actually wanted to win the game, and they had to change all those things. Anyway, if you want to weigh in on any of the action from yesterday, that John Bates kid got a play, just as I was leaving the room, I heard Ed Bates with the catch for Washington. He's a kid from Lebanon.
Right, yeah. He's had a nice career in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been there for a while, and so that was kind of neat.
So I don't think there's not an Oregon State player on either.
I saw
Steven Nelson is on Kansas City, but I think he's on their taxi squad or practice squad.
Yeah.
That they re-signed him, and I think he's just on their practice squad. And I don't think there's any Oregon Staters on the Eagles anymore.
No.
Since Isaac left.
No. We'll have to double check either of the two squads, but I don't think we have a opportunity for a local connection on a conversation. I saw a John Baptiste on the Commanders, and I looked it up, and it's not
our
Jason
guy.
John Baptiste.
So yeah,
but how many times you see that name?
Isn't he the guy that does the TV show with Mike?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think you're right.
So
yeah,
he's not on the.
I think you're right. Well, I didn't know, and I just thought I'll look that up.
I hope the Eagles win, just because I'm kind of, like the Chiefs have become the new Patriots.
Yeah.
That everyone's
exactly.
And Mahomes has become the new Brady, the guy that you can't touch or it's a penalty. And
I do like him personally.
And
I didn't really like Brady that much, but in Kansas City, I've got family member that lives in Kansas City and all that. But anytime there's teams that are always there, it's like, okay, let's get some new blood, and this will be their third straight. And if they win it, be a first time that anybody's won three, which really is surprising considering you had that run for the 49ers, you had the run for the Steelers in the 70s.
Well, and the Packers when it first started.
Yeah, that nobody has won it three times in a row. That's,
and especially, too, I will, as much as I dislike them, I'll give the Chiefs credit. I mean, anymore, when the Packers, when they won the first two Super Bowls, guys went to teams and they stayed forever, and they kept playing. You didn't have to rebuild your roster every year.
Yeah, right. Chiefs
have rebuilt their roster and done it. They kept it, they keep Kelsey, they keep Mahomes, and they keep Jones, the big defensive lineman.
Well, they're
but a lot of other guys have been changed out because they can't afford them.
Their corners, their positions, other than Kelsey and Mahomes. I mean, I don't know any of these guys, and yet they keep winning. They just keep winning. And it's almost like it's always Mahomes to Kelsey or some Mahomes scramble for a first down. And then you look up and they can't lose. And I cannot figure it out. I thought Buffalo would win for sure.
They have a great coach.
Yeah, they do.
And I'm not sure Buffalo's guy matched up.
If you have a great coach and a great quarterback.
Did not like him taking that extra point off the board.
Yeah,
21-17.
Yeah,
and they ended up chasing that point the whole game, and it cost them because it would have been, if they take the two extra points, it would have been 31-31 because the Chiefs don't go for two
right
when they went for two, and the Chiefs got it, and the Bills went for two twice. Anyhow.
Yeah. All right, so that's segment number one. Give us a call if you have anything you want to weigh in on the two games. I love it just because I love football. Yes, I love college football first, Oregon State football. But that's over with. So I grab on to the last bits of football that we have for the year. And I can't wait to put all my energy into basketball. And I can't wait for March Madness. I can't wait for the college tournaments. But there's one more football game to be played.
And if you live in the South and are a fan of college football, spring football is only like six weeks away.
Well, that's true for Oregon State as well.
Well, yeah, because they in the South, they start a little bit earlier because it gets warm. But it's like... The college football season just ended, last week?
Yeah.
Last Monday night, a week ago.
Yeah, right.
And now it's going to start again.
Start up again
soon.
6 weeks. It's crazy. Anyway, phone number is 541-497-5356. Same thing for the text line. Phone number brought to you by Downward Dog. And the text line brought to you by University Honda, 541-497-5356. I spent the better part of the weekend trying to find a car because my car died, and so spent all my time on that.
Did you have any luck?
Yeah, I found something I want to get, but I'm going to see how bad mine is damaged first. I just getting to that final thing of there was about 20 different questions I had to answer, my wife and I, and first off was, do we want SUV, pickup, or sedan. That took hours to, okay, fine. Whittled down a whole bunch of stuff, found a car that I do want. But then I learned that there's a possibility that what I have is the problem of my car might not be $3,500. It might be just a few hundred dollars. And so we decided, okay, get that checked. If it's $1,000 or above, get rid of the car and buy this other one. If it's a $999 or below, maybe less than that, pay that, drive it for another couple of years. And at least I got it whittled down to no more stress, a plan. I have a plan. And we did not have a plan on Friday when it died.
So you're past the paralysis by analysis stage.
Yes, yes. And that was hard because...
Well, it's not like, you know, when you and I were growing up, well, I got $2,000. I'm going to go out and, you know, buy a car.
It's a little different.
It's a significant investment.
And I learned a lot. I learned a ton. One thing I learned that cars in the Mid-Valley that are for sale that are used are high mileage, 150, 160, 230 on a lot of trucks that are out there. When you and I were growing up, and you're a lot older than I am, but when we were growing up, 100,000 was, you hit that and it's like, throw your car away. Now, are you kidding me? You're just getting started. 200,000 is the marker. And so I'm like, cause my old fashioned self was looking for something around, well, less than 100,000, certainly not even close. Virtually every car out there is well over 100,000.
Well, and as you, someone who grew up in Buffalo, New York, where it snows a lot and they got the snow off the road with road salt.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a car that was 100,000 miles,
man.
Because the entire body of the car was eaten away by the road salt.
Couldn't you just, after every time they do it, wash it, and then it would save it?
Well, you couldn't wash your car all winter.
So
you couldn't wash. Basically, yeah.
It'd be every day.
Yeah, your car just kind of slowly from, you know, the fender rocker, your car just slowly disintegrated.
All right, coming up, we'll talk basketball from Saturday and get into it and hear from coaches and players, which we don't really get an opportunity to do a lot. This is the Joe Beaver Show for a Monday. Tomorrow, Roxy Bernstein and Mike Parker. Results from tonight's women's game as they host Washington State and preparing for tomorrow night's Gonzaga game with Oregon State men's basketball. And we'll do all of that tomorrow. And anything else you can add to the fray here on this Monday version of the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio. Be right back. All right, Brooksy, it is 11:30. We've got the phone lines open at 541-497-5356. Text line is open as well. We're going to get in some interviews and audio, but the phone line just rang, and it's our own Dave from Tumwater. Hello, Dave. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, John, and it's always great to hear Brooks come over the airwaves as well. I joked with John when he screamed a call, wondering whether the Mid-Valley audience could take a third curmudgeon in 1 hour or not.
Well, I think we have room. I think there's a lot of curmudgeonly people out there.
Okay, so let me ask you guys to start a half rhetorical question. Do you think Vince Lombardi was a good coach?
Well, I would say yes. He was a great coach.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Not only at Army, where you know, he was an assistant, and
was it Holy Cross too?
Did that, and I mean, he won. He took Bart Starr. You know, look at what the Packers were before. I guess that's the best way to do it. What the Packers were before Vince Lombardi, they were the worst team in the NFL. He won, let's see, he beat the Giants two or three times and beat the, then
Cowboys.
Won two Super Bowls. So he won like four or five titles. And then he retires and the Packers basically were awful for the next 25 years. So, yeah, I'd say he's a pretty good coach.
Why do you ask?
Well, a reason I ask is because Brooks tipped me in this direction with my call when he talked about chasing extra points. And Brooks and John, I regard chasing extra, going for two when you don't have to, chasing mixed extra points, and not taking the points from a field goal are three of the most nonsensical aspects of modern football philosophy, and Vince Lombardi was man enough to admit that the greatest mistake he ever made, and the only game he ever lost in the postseason, the against the Philadelphia Eagles, as it should turn out, was when he didn't take three when on his first possession. He went for it on fourth, failed. They end up losing by three, but it was compounded by the fact that when the first point, whether it's three or six or seven, the first points in a game, if you have a chance to get them, they are just absolutely essential, because it not only affects the scoring dynamic that you are getting at, Brooks, with your analysis, it also affects the psychology of your team. And the famous saying from that era in football was, you never take points off the board.
Yeah.
That was the Buffalo coach's great mistake. And when you don't get it, that psychosis, that negative psychology, gentlemen, I think it seeps into your whole game from that point forward.
I agree, and I can't stand chasing extra points and going for it when you don't need to. I know that they have analytics and they have charts, and I can't stand this day and age of, well, that's what the chart says. Now, given that, Dave, I don't want to change the subject or the line that we're on, but I will just say that all of the Commanders going for it all those times on fourth down, I didn't disagree with any of them, because they were hot. They have Jaden Daniels, and I'm okay with going for it during the middle of the game when there isn't any scoring yet or whatever, for fourth down. If you're clearly on the other side of the field, I'm completely against, and the Beavers have done this. I'm not going to, paint this beautiful picture. I hate it when any team goes for fourth down and you're in your own territory.
Well, I would say there's a part of the field where going for it on fourth down makes sense. And Vince Lombardi himself did it famously. There's that gray zone on the field when you're on offense where the advantage of punting it away is minimal to non-existent. And that is, in college, it's when you're between your opponent's 35 and midfield.
Yeah.
Because if you punt it, and Jonathan Smith famously went for it on fourth down in Pullman in 2020,
right,
or 2021. But if you're only going to pick up maybe 15 to 20 yards of field position, or in other words, I see the point of going for it on fourth down there. But in the pros, if you're I just say take the points, get on the board, because you never know how a game is going to play out. And I'll tell you, the game, and I was at it, I don't know if either of you were, it was the Oregon State at Utah game in 2008.
Yep.
It was the week after the SC victory, and Mike Riley kept chasing a missed extra point, which cost him. The game never would have gone to overtime.
Right. Right.
Mike had just simply taken two other free kicks for a singleton rather than keep chasing that missed extra point.
Well, and that, if I remember right, that game never would have gone overtime if a Mountain West Conference official from 40 yards away hadn't called a bogus pass interference penalty,
yeah,
on the 2-point conversion. But yes, you're right. It's a free point. Take it. Unless you absolutely need to in the last minute. You're down two and you need to tie the score, or you're down five and you need to get within, or if you're down in the last minute or last couple of minutes, if you're down a number where 2 points will get you within one possession of tying or going ahead. But
yeah.
Otherwise,
or winning
take
it
the point. Take the point.
Yeah, I agree. And as far as the analytics chart, I'm not knowledgeable enough, and I'm not well spoken enough to be able to explain it. But but I have this kind of sense, guys, that these charts of when it makes sense to go for it on, mm-hmm, go for it on fourth down, or whether you go for the three or whatever, that's based upon maybe several generations worth of football experience. The lion's share of it was informed by the sensible, prudent coaching decisions of people like Tom Landry, Vince Lombardi, Paul Brown, when they would do the prudent thing. And I think if when enough people like McDermott make these nonsensical decisions, I think at some point the analytics are actually going to shift and indicate that, no, you don't go for it on fourth down, take the points, or go for two. But you're absolutely right, Brooks. I'm watching that score. The scoreboard as it clocks through. And if Buffalo doesn't take that first one off the board, they get their next touchdown, they get the extra point. That would not force Kansas City to go for two, which they ended up getting. But one can readily see that game is tied on Buffalo's last possession, not where they need to score. So it's just so frustrating to see these coaches outthink themselves, which I think is the best way of putting it.
Well, one other observation, and it kind of goes against my theory of don't go for it on fourth down, because it was smart for the Commanders in a couple of times, is that in the two games yesterday, and then even in the games the week before, and this the most NFL football I ever watch is the playoffs. I mean, because the Beavers are going, it's college football, and I am out. I am completely out, but I'm completely in when college football is over. And I noticed this, that no team stops each other. They all, if you get the ball somewhere, you're going to go down and score eventually. And we're seeing 8, 9, 10-minute drives, especially yesterday, that are just unbelievable. And the defenses will play well. They just won't stop you from getting down and scoring every single time. So maybe you do go for it more often, like Washington did on fourth down, than you normally would because of the modern day. But that's just a side observation that I had, that the offense right now, at least in these playoffs, has dominated over the defense.
Well, I think part of it is whether you trust your defense more or your offense more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as, like you said, it's if the coaches have these charts and they say, well, like it's fourth and four on the 18-yard line going in, like, go for it. Like it says, 70% of the time you'll make the first down, blah, blah, blah. But they use the same chart, excuse me, when they're playing Idaho State, the same chart when they're playing Oregon.
It's a little bit different defense.
I'm sorry, yeah, you have to play a little situational there, too. I don't care what the chart says. Like, going fourth and four against Idaho State, and not to demean Idaho State, but they're just not as good a defense as, like, saying going fourth and four against, like, this year Oregon's defense. It's a lot harder to pick up than a fourth and four against Idaho State's defense.
But the chart
equates them.
Yeah.
And to me, that's kind of a false
equivalence. Unless they make a new one every week. I don't know.
Well, then you'd have to only have analytics from games against Oregon, mm-hmm. which, you know, there's no way they have that for the last 30 years.
I don't know. It's crazy. Anything else, Dave?
No, that's it. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Great stuff. Thanks, Dave, for calling in. 497-5356. Downward Dog phone line, 497-KJO. If you're looking at your dial pad the old-fashioned way. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan, and I know the three of us are against it, but analytics. And, oh, boy, the 30-somethings, man. They love analytics.
I'm not against them. It's a tool you can have. I mean, where you can have, you actually have a specific, we got this guy, pick a Mariners guy Dylan Moore, you know, against this pitcher in his career, he's like 15 for 35. So yeah, of course you play the guy, but that's a limited, it should be used as a tool,
right.
not as the beat all end all decision maker.
Well, and it's not the same sport to sport. Baseball, absolutely, it kind of works because you can really get down to this guy cannot hit this pitcher.
Yes.
And that they've been doing for decades. They've just gotten better with it with computers, and they've gotten better with it with computers and video that show spin rates and tell you why he can't hit him. And so baseball, I'm all into analytics. Maybe not so much on calling on whether or not you bunt or not, and the NFL or the NFL, Major League Baseball, where they just don't bunt anymore.
Nobody
at all.
Bunts because it's a wasted out.
And which is funny because I said back in the day to guys like you and Mike Parker, why do they waste that? Because I didn't know the nuances of baseball, and I'm asking and I'm learning and I'm thinking and this is in the heyday of Beaver Championships, and I'm like going, why would you bunt? Because you're literally losing an out, and outs are really precious. And then the answer from the likes of you and Doc Parker, oh, well, you got, and all the reasons why they did bunt up until lately.
Never early in the game. If you are playing, if you need one run, then I could justify a bunt. But if you sacrifice bunt, you're playing for one run. And that's generally what you'll get. So I'm not a big fan of the sacrifice bunt. I just finished a book on the biography of Earl Weaver, which is a great book, and just how he evolved over the years. That, as he said, the first rule of managing is the most precious thing in managing is your 27 outs. Yeah. Do not give one away early with a sacrifice bunt.
I guess I was right in the beginning.
You know, that's just me. I believe that. Some do, some don't.
Yeah. No doubt.
All right, let's, here on the old Zamboni.
The old Zamboni. Mike from Salem. Mike from Salem, welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, fellas. You know, funny, a couple of things I was thinking of saying. Dave covered so well the chasing of the extra points. That's driven me nuts forever.
Mm-hmm.
But just a few things, thinking of the playoffs and things that have come up is, you know, no matter how you feel how things came in and out and how disappointing it must be for all these people, just once again, and this one I know is back a week, but is there a worse fate in sports than being a Detroit Lions fan? Oh, my goodness.
Being a Bills fan.
I don't know.
Pretty close.
I don't know. I had a friend I worked with for a few years who was from East Lansing, and family had, believe it or not, kept season tickets all through all the various places and all the various years from the great years in the 50s, and he says, you know, they've assumed for decades they're cursed and they're never going to play for another championship ever. And yeah, you just see these things happen to other fan bases and you go, boy, no matter how disappointed you might be over sometimes, there's always somebody.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, more to the things over the weekend is, you know, Brooks mentioned how, and I try not to be personal or negative when I call you the show because you guys are so good. But I don't know, just an opinion or a question, I guess. In watching the last few weeks, because I really don't pay attention to the NFL till the college is over these days, not close attention.
Yeah.
Just I'll ask you a question. Do you find Tom Brady an annoying commentator?
I thought that the last couple of weeks he's gotten much better.
Yes, from the beginning of the year.
Yeah, that you know, it's... a job, I guess you have to grow into, and I think he's gotten a lot better. The thing that freaks me out about Tom Brady is that when they show, you know, the commentators before the game, and Brady's there with I can't think of KB, who I don't know who that dude is.
I'm trying.
But anyhow, Brady looks like he's about 14 years old. He looks younger now than he did 30 years ago. So I guess he really takes care of himself. But I actually think Tom Brady has gotten better. The last 4 or 5 weeks, but he's still, I don't think he's worth 30-something million.
No, and I'll tell you what, Mike, here being in this business from the radio side, what irritates me to no end has always been, going back years and years, but it's really gotten bad with television, is this assumption that a great athlete is going to be a great broadcaster. To be a broadcaster, there's schooling you have to go through, there's lumps you take in small markets and you climb and you get to where you're at. Now, analysts have always been former athletes, and that's totally fine. But there, you can't just take anybody. And I do know that they put them through these little mini schools that they have. But when they do have someone come along, the best guy, and I might be wrong on his name. Was it Greg Olsen?
Yeah, the tight end, the ex-tight end from the Carolina Panthers, who used to be the partner of this KB guy.
He was number one, and then he got bumped for Tom Brady with zero experience. That part of it is what's irritating.
Yeah, maybe it's just because I grew up in New England as a Giants fan, surrounded by Patriots fans. And, of course, when the Patriots had their glory years, it was just this guy who walked on water, and maybe that's just me. But the last thing I was thinking of, and it really came about a lot because of that fourth down review with the Bills and the Chiefs, and then what you see with how the Eagles have perfected that goal line play is that, man, the NFL has got to have more money than any organization on earth. And how they continue to have no accurate way of measuring a spot. And, you know, you see these clumps of people. You know, there's GPS has got to the point where you can't tell me they couldn't stick a chip in both ends of a football.
Exactly.
And have a strip along the thing, and they'd be able to tell to the micrometer where that ball is. And the one with the Chiefs where the guy ran down one side of the stripe and the other guy ran down the other.
Yeah.
And you just say, oh, here it comes. Here we go. Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, it's just awful. And when you see the big lumps of guys like those, like the Philly push, there's just no way they know if that ball has gone across at some point.
But of course, I agree with you. Put the chip in the ball and all this stuff. But then when it comes time to measure, you know, Clem Clididdlehopper and Joe Blow from the, you know. Oh. That
the
used
stick.
To work
Here
for the.
Come the sticks. Yeah, like they're going to solve these, everything.
It's like you watch a football game from the 90s, and the one thing that hasn't changed, is that the sticks. I mean, that you watch those old films, the quarterbacks. It looks like they're throwing a Zeppelin. You know, the ball.
Yeah.
So, and the leather helmets and those pants and all that stuff. But you know, they still have the guys on the sidelines with the chain gang. And
chain gang's always been there.
There has to be a better way to do it than that.
I challenge anybody, and whether they're young or old, I challenge anybody, after you've been standing there on a cold day like that, you tell me you're going to run the 25 yards across that field, and you are going a straight line.
Yeah.
It just drives me nuts.
Well, I've been wondering about chips for a couple of years now, because they have chips in basketballs now that'll tell you information of where the shot was taken and all kinds of stuff. And I saw it a couple of years ago when I was at Iowa State with Beaver basketball, their basketball program had these to practice with. I'm like, well, okay, why can't you put them in football? I guess you can. They just don't want to right now.
It takes away the human element.
Now, let's get that it's nefarious. This is so they can decide at some point whether the Chiefs go back to the Super Bowl or the Bills.
You're right. You enter into with the conspiracy theory part of it all.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm going to let you guys go and put my tin hat back on. Go from there. Great show. Go Beavs, guys.
Thank you, man. That's Mike in Seattle. Let's take a break. Your phone calls are always welcome. 541-497-5356. And, of course, that's the same for University Honda text line as well, 541-497-5356. The chip in the ball would solve a lot of problems, especially when there's a pile so big like there was in that Kansas City game where he went over the top of the pile, and then it looked like he dropped the ball, and there was a scramble underneath. I think they should use it. Tennis has been using it for outs for a long time now. Anyway, be right back. Take your phone calls to finish out the hour on 1240 Joe Radio.
Omaha.
Yeah, there we go. Here we go. We continue now with the Joe Beaver Show. We got a couple of minutes, so let's go back to the phone lines. Dave, welcome to the program here on this Monday.
Hey, John. First of all, I don't envy you having a car shop. and it's crazy because everything is high miles.
Yep.
And if you don't get the Carfax, you don't know. I looked at trucks just 2 weeks ago that I thought were really good deals and went out of my way to go see them. You know, and then I look underneath and the frame's completely rusted out. The Carfax shows that it came down. It came down from Canada, you know.
It's brutal.
Be careful what you buy. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
And everything's super high miles for what you think is a reasonable price and anything. It's really tough to find a good actual bargain on.
That's why I'm glad I have a plan now, and the plan will be a 1 or 2 day plan.
Yeah. So now the thing that bugs me, two things about the referees. First of all, you know, you're right. The guy made that call. The guy that stuck to his guns about the call was the guy that didn't even see where the ball was. He couldn't have seen where the ball was.
And
it makes you wonder, like, why is that guy, you know, the other guy comes in and says, I was on the ball side, this is what I saw, right? But what's worse, and it's only designed to save face for the referees, right, or the officials on the field, is there's no conclusive evidence to overturn it. Like, did you get the call right, or is it wrong? Because I think 75% of the viewing audience saw what we saw, and that it was a first down.
See, and that's just it, though, Dave. Think about this. The most important thing is what the original call was, because you have to see with perfection to overturn a call. So whichever call is made is crucial, because it's got more standing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but even those two guys on the field didn't agree. But you see it when they whistle a play dead, it turns out it was a fumble, and the guy was, you know, halfway to the end zone with nobody, you know, 20 yards around him, and they say, oh, well, the whistle blew the play dead. And you're going, why are you blowing the play dead if you're not, you know what I mean? So it just, to me, is it designed to save face for the officials, or to actually, you know, get the right play or the right call in the end?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. It's a good question. We got to go because we're out of time this hour. Thanks, Dave, for the call. Coming up next hour, again, continue of this conversation, plus some baseball in next hour, and some basketball audio as well. The only thing that keeps us from playing the audio is phone calls. And so that was a good hour, a good first hour. By the way, Dave from Sandy has written in to say that there are chips in footballs. They've been trying to perfect the system, but it isn't quite ready yet. There's an issue with getting the exact location based on the same issue when they have all the piles of men, because there is no overhead system to measure forward motion.
Drones.
I'd have to break that one down.
Because there was.
Really look at that
they
paragraph.
They had an overhead camera at the game last night. And maybe they only do it for special games.
But even still, if you put a line at the goal line and just have it be an invisible line that goes up, let's say, 30 feet, okay? Why can't you do that so that if that chip breaks that line that goes from the ground up to 20 feet or 30 feet, then it goes off and it says you made it in?
Yeah, I don't know. I was told there wasn't going to be any science or math in our show today.
We try not to anyway. But think about that. You could easily make a barrier that goes up 10, 15, 20 feet, and if the chip goes through it, it lights the horn. Back after this.
The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
22.
What do you mean?
22.
After all the uncertainties of the past 2 years, there's been an expectation and a hope for a more normal 22-23. But now the question is, USC and UCLA do.
They're both Big Ten schools.
Yeah.
But where does that leave the rest of us? Who could possibly answer that question in this strange new era of analytics? Mad transfers.
How did it get here?
Well, it looks to me like you portaled in.
A what?
You know, portal. From wherever you were to here.
What's that?
It's a different kind of portal. Oh, it's just changed so radically, and we're all running to catch up.
And realignments.
They're both Big Ten schools.
Yep.
All we do know is the boys are back, and the Joe Beaver Show plots its own course.
Now there are a few more topics that we have to cover. And we will not talk about transfers, and we will not talk about my mother. We will talk about what I want to talk about.
Fair enough. Who's next? Joe Beaver is on 1240 Joe Radio.
Oh, my gosh. That is such a funny open. That open was made back in 2022, just a couple of years ago. And everything is in there. Transfers and portal. The whole portal thing was hilarious. I love that. Anyway, hour number two of the Joe Beaver Show, that whole stop and go thing, Brooksy, with the computer there at the top of the hour, that usually happens at 4 a.m. and then it doesn't happen the rest of the day. It has to do with our audio server in the back room. I cannot control it. I can't stop it. I can't override it. I can't do a thing. And it just stops and goes and stops and goes. And I just have to sit here and wait for it. So, with everybody listening to the Joe Beaver Show and that happening, I get a lot of questions. If not from you, then from Mike. And I'm just like, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm driving a Volkswagen that's being held together by bubble gum and duct tape. And
in the meanwhile, we'll just move into the lunar landing module and fly around. And then we'll go back into the capsule when we have to.
I can tell you from experience, though, I think that that's done. It usually runs its course. And I think that is done for the day, so we shouldn't have any more interruptions. A couple of things here on our house cleaning.
Looks like we got some good texts.
Mike will join us tomorrow, and so will Roxy Bernstein. Roxy's coming on at 11:30 tomorrow.
Good. We can actually find out from Roxy maybe when we're not done talking basketball, like, where are the Oakland A's going to be?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, has he been, like, got a place to live in? Is he going to live in Sacramento, like, for the summer?
Right.
Are they really going to go to Vegas? What's up?
Yeah, because it's not a done deal for Vegas.
I don't think so. I don't think they've broken ground on that stadium yet.
They did raise the building.
Yeah, but they're probably going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Huh. Roxy will know.
All right, we'll keep that in mind for tomorrow. Drew Rasmussen will join us on Thursday when Mike is back, and Kennedy Schuler on Friday. So already getting some slots filled for Thursday and Friday's show.
Yeah, I guess Drew was back. I did not go to the
Diamond Dinner
on Friday, but Drew was there.
Do you usually go to the Diamond Dinner?
I have for many years in the past, but the last couple of years I didn't go. Drew Rasmussen, also, you know, Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
He'll be a teammate this year of Brandon Eichert, who was released by Toronto when they signed Anthony Santander. And then within a day or two, and he wasn't released, he was designated for assignment.
Yeah.
Toronto worked a deal with the Tampa Bay Rays. So Drew Rasmussen and Brandon Eichert will be, hopefully, Drew will make the team. Hopefully, Brandon will make the team, and they'll be teammates.
Very nice. Very nice. You love to see, there's a lot of Beaver representation out there in Major League Baseball or on at least on the club, whether or not they make it out of spring training to the big club or not. There's still a lot. It's pretty cool. And, you know, Travis will make the big club this year, right?
My guess is he'll probably start in Double A, but
finish the year maybe with Cleveland?
Yeah, maybe, because the Indians did not sign, or they traded their incumbent second baseman.
Okay, good. Well, that's just another member.
They're clearing the deck for Travis.
Cleveland. So you got all kinds of representation. Okay, so with that, let me go to the text line. By the way, we're talking, some of NFL football. Mike from Salem had a great call about why can't you chip the ball. I've been asking that question for a couple of years now. Dave from Sandy says there are chips in the ball. I'll read this again now that we have a little time to break it down. They've been trying to perfect the system, but it isn't quite ready yet. There is an issue with getting the exact location based on the same issue when they have all the piles of men because there is no overhead system to measure forward motion. Well, that speaks to the issue of who has the ball or did it cross the first down marker. Yes, that does have to be looked at and fixed, perhaps. But I think more importantly, wouldn't it be easy enough to put a beam across the goal line so you can just, if the chip breaks the plane of the beam, you're in. To me, that seems like that would be one of the easiest things you could do.
Then they would only have to check to see if your knee was down.
Right.
Because, you know, there are times where I think, oh, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
But then you watch the replay and his knee is down and then the guy falls over.
Right. No, but at least it would eliminate everything else.
Yeah,
just
maybe
check
we
that
could
out.
Have another review because Lord knows there's not enough of them.
Yeah. So for Dave, thanks for that. It's good to know that at least they're working on it.
Yeah.
And speaking of Dave and Sandy, it's interesting because there's a little bit of a triangular thing here that connects. I had said to Mike in Salem that I saw chips and basketballs and when I was with the Beaver basketball team on a road trip a couple of years ago. Dave and Sandy talks about chips. I don't know how he knows all this, but it was in Iowa at Iowa State that I saw these basketballs, and it was at Iowa State where Dave from Sandy went to school. And the whole thing just comes around and connects right there. It was really cool. I was with the team. Now, the men don't have it for some reason, but the women do, from what I remember. And there was this, they have their indoor, well, not indoor, but they have their practice facility for basketball. And it's a beautiful facility, but it's, you know how ours is on one on top of the other? So you got floor, coach's office, floor, coach's office. Theirs is down on the ground. So you look at it from the street, and you have women on one side, men on the other, and then this middle portion where they all gather for food and training table and all kinds of stuff just for basketball. Fantastic. So we happened to practice that day in the men's side. And a lot of times when I go to practice with the team, they'll do their thing. I get bored and we'll walk around. And I noticed a rack of balls that were sitting on a rack that had little chargers on them and little red lights. And there was just this guy walking through. And I said, hey, tell me about this. So he said, oh, yeah, no, it's the chip in the ball. And I think both men and women have it. It's obviously it's just for practice. But he says, the computer program that goes with it tells you, you know, where the shot was taken, what kind of arc it had on it, all the things you would want to know that are most everything, obviously, that's done by hand, you know, when you do a shot chart. And he said, it works great. He goes, there's a few glitches in it, but for the most part, it works really well. And this was like 3 years ago when the Beavers played at Iowa State. So one has to think that they could get that perfection done on the chip and the football. Kevin Burkhart was the name of that we were trying
KB.
To grab.
Hey, KB.
Yeah, KB. And CVB on the discussion we had earlier about bunting, he says bunting is very last or extra innings of tied or one run situations, even more so since the ghost runner rule.
Yeah, if you are playing for one run, then the bunt makes sense. And oh, by the way, I'm not hammering on CVB here because my older brother does it. He hates what he calls the ghost runner. And I'm going, no, the ghost runner is when you were a kid and you had like three guys on a team. And,
and you're trying to fill it out.
Yeah, you had to say, well, there's the ghost runner's on third. Like there was not someone there. There is someone on the base. You start the inning with an actual human being. At second base, it's not a ghost runner. Yeah, but I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, here's another text, Dean from Eugene. Why aren't you guys talking about
Eugene.
The big men's basketball win and the amazing performance by Michael and Polo? Dean, that's the absolute next thing we're talking about, and we were going to talk about it in the first hour, but. You know, we just got kind of lost on a few other
things. I
was
thinking about it on the way over that, I mean, I was at the game on Saturday. Michael Ritai, you know, he had like 26 points with like a minute to go or two minutes to go. And we're going, wow, wouldn't it be great if he got the 30? And he made four free throws in the end to get the 30. I would think that Michael Ritai might be at least in the preliminary conversation for West Coast Conference Player of the Year.
That's a good question.
I mean,
I haven't really been paying to what other guys have done.
If he keeps playing like he's been playing.
Well, let's see. He goes and he goes 10 for 10, too, at the line.
Yeah.
The team, missed, 21 of 22. Yeah,
missed one free throw. Parsifala missed one of two.
A couple of games ago, the team went 31 of 32. This is there's been a lot of years where the team just would be real up and down on free throws. Horrible. 4 of 18, you know, one game, and then 16 of 18 the next. But they're really consistent this year. In that aspect, the team is also pushing for a record year for shooting percentage on the season. And they shot 54% from the field in the last game. I think right around 60% on Thursday against Pepperdine. Michael Ritai, 30 points, 6 rebounds, and 10 for 10 from the field or from the free throw line. He was 2 for 5 from 3-point range. I mean, the guy just keeps getting better and better as the season goes along. And the thing I like about this year's team, too, unlike the last couple of years where they were losing a lot, but is there it's spread out more. You had four guys in double figures, and Parsifala was only one shy of double figures with 9, and that's because he kind of came back. He didn't get very many minutes because he's coming back from concussion protocol. So you might have had 5 guys in double figures.
Yeah, and the thing that I also noticed was that it I don't want to say used to be – you know, Wayne's, if he's listening, he's probably going, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But anyhow, when a starter would come out, we were really limited on who could come in and take his place without significant drop-off.
Right, right.
And now, like I said on Saturday, Parsa did not start. Marsh started, and then Parsa came in. And then when Parsa came out, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name because I'm horrible, Maxime.
Logie, Maxime Logie.
Logie. He came in, and wow, he scored like 6 points. Yeah. That guy's got, he looks like an NFL tight end.
Yeah.
And there was no,
he's a beast.
Really no, I mean, I'm sure there's a little drop off, otherwise he'd be starting, but,
right.
But you have some quality depth now that you can bring guys off the bench and, you know, you're not bringing in Joe Blow from Kokomo or something that, that isn't really a good player. You're when a guard comes out, you know, Josiah Lake comes in and he's an excellent player.
Yeah.
Or, the guy, number, I'm horrible with names. Number 13, the shooter, Cy?
C.
Yeah,
Isaiah C.
Isaiah C comes in. That guy can, you know, he can shoot from Philomath. He guy's a good shooter. So we have some depth. Now the thing is, you got to keep this team together. I did read something over the weekend where, like, USC really wants Michael Ritaya, that they're already speaking to to some of his people.
I'm sure of it.
But he loves it here. So, you know, hopefully he stays, but. You got to keep these guys.
I know. I'm sure of it. I'm just sure of it. And I think that Wayne's new philosophy, or at least trying out this idea that if you get a bunch of guys from overseas, they might be, and these are his own words, they might be more inclined to stick together because of coming from far away and not being in our culture, if you will.
I mean, you keep
so
this,
far so good.
You keep this team together for.
Oh,
a year or two, and
yeah.
You know, you're going to sign some guys. So add one or two guys. All of a sudden, kaboom! We're pretty good again.
Which again is the thing that we've grown out of in college sports, football and basketball. Is that's the way it used to be. You could look at this group and see who has eligibility left and go, okay, all right. So we've got a couple more years with these guys, and then you add a few guys here and there upon graduation, and you've got yourself a program that will win year in and year out, at least. Be better than it has been, but now you, like you said, I forgot about that. In fact, this is why I'm so amazed right now, is because I completely have forgotten. Oh yeah, that's right. They gotta re-recruit these guys to stay. It's depressing. It's the new world we're in, and I hate it. Parsifala. Now I don't know.
And I think it will be easier to keep guys this year to next year because there won't be the dramatic change that there was from last year to this year.
Yeah.
Of changing leagues
and all
that stuff. I mean, decimated the women's program, you know, hurt the men's program. Yeah. I mean, you look at, I've watched a couple of UCLA games. I mean, Tyler Bilodeau, that guy's a beast.
I know.
I can't believe
I was watching a UCLA game. He was the leading scorer. I know.
All of a sudden, I mean, and you know, who did all the work developing him?
Yeah. Well,
when he came out of high school and was kind of raw. And
yeah.
Who did all the work developing him? And then. He goes down there to UCLA. I guess he liked to get yelled at. So now the
and that's the way of the world now for all the sports. And you know it's several years in the making. Where I remember the first time anybody ever talked about that was highlighting a kid who had come from like Central Michigan and gone on to you know a bigger college, Baylor or somebody in football. And at the time, someone made that comment. Well, now under this new system that we're in. The smaller schools are just going to, you know, be a training ground for all the bigger schools to poach from. And it was kind of that first realization that, oh, yeah, that's right. And we're in it now. We're living it. We're living that kind of thing. And it's really quite depressing, to be honest with you. Let's listen in, if we can, to a little bit of Nate Kings and Coach Marlon Stewart in the postgame with Mike on Saturday. And I'll just play it the way it played out. On the post-game show, just to, you know, a lot of you don't get a chance to hear the post-game show and those interviews and things like that, and a little bit of insight after that big win. Really nice win for the Beavers, 83-69. Again, Ritaya with a career-high 30, 16 for Nate Kings, and Nate was there in the post-game with Mike Parker. I don't know what happened there. All right, well. We'll just stop it right there.
Yeah, okay. Nate had my favorite play from him was you know near the end of the game, Santa Clara was pressing and trying to get back in, and I think maybe I think it might have been DeMarco Minor found him open and he had a slam. I mean, take it right to the hole and slam it with authority.
Let me see
as
what
Marvin Albert used to say.
Let me see what this is right here. All right, it wasn't that play, but it was a play.
You know, one thing too that many people in Corvallis might not know, Nate played at McNary High School.
Yeah.
In Kaiser, right? McNary's across. And his head coach was Ryan Kirch, former neighbor of mine on Northwest Thistle Place in Corvallis, and former great player at Crescent Valley High School.
Really?
In the 90s, yeah.
Hmm. I don't remember.
Yeah, Ryan has been the coach at McNary for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now, 7 or 8 years. He started coaching at Staten, and now he's over at McNary. He coached Bob Cavill's, one of Bob Cavill, ex-Beaver player, coached one of Bob Cavill's kids at McNary. Done a nice job at McNary.
Very nice, very nice.
The Celtics.
I wanted to take a look at the net rankings and just kind of go through it. Auburn, of course, number one, and they're number one in the AP. The net rankings in the AP do not match. In fact, some teams are way off. But your top five in the net rankings this week are Auburn, Duke, Houston, Tennessee, and Florida. At any one point, I think all of these teams have been number one. I don't know about Florida. I know that Tennessee was. But anyway, Auburn, Duke, Houston, Tennessee, and Florida. There's your top five. Your bottom five. 364.
There's a lot of college basketball teams.
Yes. Mississippi Valley State from the SWAC. 363rd in the deal. Also from the SWAC. Arkansas Pine Bluff. Coppin State. UMES. I do not know what that is.
University of Maryland Eastern Shore.
Good pull from the MEAC. That is a great pull. They're 0-16. By the way, Mississippi Valley State's 0-18, hence the 364th position. I don't know how Maryland Eastern Shore, though, is ahead of Coppin State and Arkansas Pine Bluff without any wins.
Probably because they played better body bag games than Coppin State did.
So there's your top, your bottom four, Alabama A&M to make it an even bottom five, okay? And anywhere in between are some pretty familiar faces. Now, Oregon State is hovering around in the 50s. 54, and the last couple of net rankings, they've been 51, 52, and now they're 54, and I'm thinking, man, what do they got to do to break 50? But I'm not going to complain because there's some bigger name schools and schools that most recently were in the conference, the Pac-12 conference, that are even worse than Oregon State.
Yeah, what Oregon State has to do is win at Gonzaga.
That would help. The bummer thing is that Gonzaga had lost to Santa Clara at home after they lost to Oregon
still,
State.
It's going to be a good win.
In fact, where is Gonzaga on this?
They got to be in the top 30.
Yeah, because they were in the top 25, but they're out of the AP top 25 now. They're not in the top 38. Oh, no, they're 16.
Yeah.
Gonzaga is 16th in the net rankings, but they're not even in the AP top 25, which is voters. This one is the mathematical formula. So Gonzaga is ranked 16th.
Yeah,
and why wouldn't that win?
And St. Mary's is 23rd, so we have some chances to really move up.
Yeah, but why wouldn't that win over Gonzaga a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, meant more than just hovering in the 50s.
Well,
the Beavers
were in the 60s like last week. So
they were? Okay.
Yeah, so they're moving up.
Because prior to that, I'd seen them.
You're looking at this thing here. Arkansas Pine Bluff, 1-16.
Yeah.
Against Mississippi Valley State, the alma mater of Jerry Rice.
That's right.
They're both in the SWAC. Now, that could be like your ESPN ought to hype that game, like do a reverse national championship, you know?
Yeah, because they'll play each other.
Yeah, the race to the bottom.
The race to the first win or the first, you know, staying at the bottom.
I mean, there are some bad college. I mean, unfortunately for me, Canisius is down there, number 357, my favorite team growing up.
See, in Pine Bluff, even though they're 1-16, they're 0-14 in league play.
Yeah.
So neither one of them has a conference win.
We're number 364.
Yeah. Right?
People in the stands hold, you know, bring on, we want Duke, you know, those old signs that they used to hold up.
But anyway, there's a few. Let me just go through it here. UCLA 33. You got UConn at 36. And okay, these are all in front of Oregon State. Memphis, who, you know, for weirder reasons, could become a member of the Pac-12 conference. Future Pac-12 conference foe San Diego State is 42. From the Mountain West right now, you have Gosh, UC Irvine is 50. They're four spots ahead of Oregon State.
And we beat them.
And we beat them, yeah. Boise State, future opponent, 52nd. The Beavers, 54th. Now, behind Oregon State, there's some big names. Arizona State comes in at number 59 in the net rankings. Nebraska, 63. The Beavers should have beat Nebraska. They must have lost a couple games because they were looking pretty good. But Nebraska's behind the Beavers. Stanford at number 69. Stanford just went and won at Duke a week and a half ago. Some other schools, Florida State's a big name school. Nevada's at 76. They've been good in basketball recently. Utah down at number 78. They're struggling this year. Washington State, 87th in the net rankings. You've got Notre Dame at 89, well below Oregon State. South Carolina behind them, well below Oregon State. The Huskies are 99th. Now, they're struggling in the Big Ten this year. They're 9-10 overall, and they're 0-5 in conference play. And by the way, they're not going to get anybody feeling sorry for them, at least in our neck of the woods.
No.
Cal at 116 on this list. I mean, Cal's behind St. Thomas of Minnesota in the Summit League. So, I don't know. And Virginia now. Virginia loses Tony Bennett at the beginning of the year, like weeks before the start of the season, and he basically says, I'm out, because he can't really deal with the new world that we're in with Portal and NIL and all that. So Virginia's fallen all the way down to 138. They were a top 10 program for years and years and years. So it just goes to show you know, where you stand and where other teams stand, and everything is different from year to year. But this is a good year for Oregon State, right now hovering at 54, and they've been as high as 51 from what I've seen. They may have been higher than that. But really interesting if you take a look at, and this is an ever-changing poll, rankings.
Changes nightly because, you know, depending on
different
who
games.
Plays who.
Different games and different teams. So it's fun to keep an eye on and just go, all right, well, who's around us? Who's really below us? And how can we feel better about ourselves?
Well,
kind of a
the thing.
Thing,
you know, I'm not exactly sure. I've seen some things, how the West Coast Conference tournament works. But if you can't finish first or second, then you better finish, I think, third or fourth, because then you only have to win three games.
Yeah.
If you finish first or second, you get like a double bye.
Exactly.
To the quarterfinals, so you only, or the, to the semifinals, so you literally only got to win two games to win the conference.
It's like they play both the men and the women in the same venue, and it's one game and then another and so forth. So you got all these teams at the Orleans Arena, and it's like a 9-day tournament. And the top two teams, top three teams are literally waiting until Saturday or Sunday.
Which is, you know, when in 2026, 27, when the reborn Pac-12 starts, I would like, you know, I've never been to a conference basketball tournament.
Yeah.
But now that I'm retired, I'm not a big fan of Vegas. But like, if you put the men's and the women's tournaments at the same place and at the same time.
Yeah.
Then you don't run the risk of, like, you know, you spend all this money, go down there, and your team loses on the first day.
Yeah.
And you're done. And so at least with both teams there, there's a chance that you'll at least get to see you're guaranteed two games.
I agree if they can fit them in. The West Coast Conference has managed to do it, so I don't know why others can't. And then both the men and the women get to play in the same venue. One would think, logistically, it would make things easier. Maybe not. Staying at the same hotel, all of that. Hotel give you a rate because you got all these teams coming in, the whole nine yards. So instead of it being T-Mobile Arena for the Pac-12 like it has been, it'll be Orleans Arena where they've kind of turned a... Now, I don't know this for sure, but I thought this was the case when the Beavers first played there in a non-conference game many years ago in women's hoops. It looked like they took one of their convention rooms and turned it into a basketball court.
Well, I haven't watched any of the women's tournament from the Orleans, so I don't know if it's on the exact same court. But the men's, it looks like it's a little like a 5,000 or 6,000 seat arena.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's filled when Gonzaga plays there.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's great. There's nothing worse than some of those Pac-12 conference tournament games at was it Thomas and Mack Center? No, that T-Mobile Arena.
T-Mobile.
You know, like. The 9:30 game on opening day, Washington State's playing Arizona State, and there's, you know, the both teams have their little pep band, and then there's like 40 people there.
Well, that's That's Americana.
Yeah.
That's like tournaments you go to in high school. And I just love that. That nothing has changed in 60 years of the smell, the popcorn smell, the band doing their thing. And sometimes the place is empty because it's early in the morning in the loser's bracket. Sometimes it's packed to the house. I remember the OSAA tournament back in the 70s. Every Friday night was semifinal Friday night. It was always full, 12,000 people. And then Championship Saturday was as well. And there were some great games and great players seen over the years and watching them. Then around the time I was in high school, early 80s, Benson played somebody in a game that needed to be moved time-wise for something. And they played this second, it was a quarter or a semifinal game. I don't remember, but it was a big game. It was still a winner's bracket game at 9 o'clock in the morning. And the place was almost full.
Wow.
Because you had two Portland teams, or at least Benson was playing. And it was just like,
that is the old days.
That's an anomaly.
I mean, I remember when I first moved here, the class A tournament, or what? No, the 4A tournament.
Yeah.
Was at the Coliseum, and it was a 16-team tournament.
Yeah.
You had to win four games to win state. And it still was double elimination in that, you know, you got to play. So they'd have like a breakfast bracket game at like 8:30 in the morning.
Absolutely. Yeah, those were great days. And they would have 16 teams all the way up until just a few years back. Then they went played the first eight games at locations.
Yeah,
and then
they had 16, but you played eight on campus.
On campus, right. And, you know, that's okay. And then they would bring the girls in with their eight and do the old 16-team format, but with boys and girls. It's great. Every other game is a boys' game, a girls' game. And all the families and the fans and the schools, perfect.
So, I don't know. Where is the 4A tournament anymore?
I don't even know. I mean, I've been out of it for a number of years.
Women, girls, they still play at the Child Center, don't they?
Last time I checked, yes, they did for 6A. The 5A, I believe, was at Liberty High School. 4A, for the longest time, was in Corvallis. And 3A has always been, I want to say, Coos Bay. 2A, 1A was over in Pendleton. And I don't know if that's the same. I mean, it's easy something to look up. But it was it's changed a lot over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing from Bandon High School or something like that. We have good news. We made the state tournament. Yeah, what's the bad news? Well, we got to go to Pendleton.
Yeah, I was wrong.
Fire up the bus.
It was Duke and Stanford, North Carolina. Thanks, Jesse.
How about Stanford's women's team this
year? Duke's only losses are at Kansas and Kentucky, and are undefeated at home. Just a heads up. Yeah, I said Duke. I meant North Carolina.
Stanford's women's team is below 500 overall.
No,
and like 2-6 in the conference. They're not going to make the unless they strike lightning and somehow win the 18-team ACC conference.
You know, with them not being in the conference anymore, I just never even thought to look at them.
Yeah, I don't follow anybody.
Many that I don't follow that we used to. And, of course, Tara retired. Yeah,
you know, like you said, Oregon lost to Minnesota. Well, you know, I sort of followed it. But in the old days, because, you know, we'd say Thursday night we played Arizona and the Ducks played Arizona State. Then, okay, we're flipping around.
Yeah.
So you would follow it. But I don't know how good they are in the Big Ten.
I'll tell you right now.
I know that it was 20 degrees in Minneapolis yesterday, so that couldn't have been very much fun for them.
This is unbelievable to me. Stanford is 2-6 in ACC play, way down in the bottom third, and 10-9 overall.
10-9, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're not going to make the tournament. Can you have Stanford hosting an NIT game?
They
probably would turn it down. They just wouldn't take it. Or a WNIT
right
game.
Now, it's Notre Dame ranked third in the country, Duke 10th, North Carolina State 17th. Then you have Louisville in there. Cal's ranked 19th. They're 6-2. Then Florida State's ranked 25th. North Carolina is ranked 15th ahead of Florida State. And Florida State is a half game better in the conference standings. And Georgia Tech's ranked 20th, and they're way down. They're 5-4, but in the middle of the pack, but they're still in the top 25. So the ACC is where women's basketball is right now. But Stanford, oh, my gosh. That is unbelievable to me.
Yeah, they had I can't think of her name, but like their best player transferred, and I don't know where she went to, but can you imagine transferring from Stanford?
Well, the gal, did she graduate, who was from Mountainside High School and the big with long blonde?
Yeah,
She's in the WNBA now?
Yes, I can't think of her name.
Yeah, I know. She was really good. And it was tough to not be able to get her to come to Corvallis. This was a couple of years ago, obviously. But that was a tough one to lose. And somebody sent us a link. This was the other day. Joe Beaver Show. It's an interesting read. Kurt from Philomath. Thanks, Kurt. I haven't had a chance to look at this, but I will. And I got that on the text line. The text line is 541-497-5356, brought to you by University of Honda. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Take your phone calls and texts. Thanks for the update, Jesse. It was North Carolina. I remember watching the whole second half. I don't know why I said Duke on that. And but the bigger thing was that Stanford, who's below Oregon State in the net rankings quite a bit, they had a huge win at North Carolina. And you just don't see things like that very much anymore. Back after this, the number 541-497-5356 on 1240 Joe Radio. All right, continuing on here on the Joe Beaver Show. 541-497-5356, the Downward Dog phone line and the University Honda text line. Let's go to the phone line and check in with Mike. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, guys. I just thought I would chip in on a couple, three things. Baseball's around the corner, and my wife, Chris, and I are getting ready to head down to Arizona Surprise, then to Round Rock, and then to Arlington. We're going to this year, we're gonna just follow the team and the parent, or friends of the parents. We're just gonna truck down there and see some great baseball. I understood yesterday it was 70 degrees. It was 21 here this morning. I'm thinking 70 degrees sounds pretty dang good.
It does, and the weather in Surprise in 3 weeks or whenever it is, 2 weeks, is gonna be fantastic. 3 weeks now for Beaver fan going there. I'm actually headed in March to go see the Cubs play with my son in the Phoenix area. So I can't wait. Cannot wait.
Oh, you know, years ago we did that. We went down to watch spring training. We watched when the Bees played 7 games down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was that my team, 85-86, Beavers baseball, has held the record, hits runs record, you know, the start of the season record.
Mm-hmm.
That team that year tied the record. And, you know, guys walked around and I had to kind of jab them a little bit. You know, it's like all of us old guys, you know, we're looking at it going, oh my God, how old am I now? It's like 30 some years, almost 38 or whatever it was. And it's like, you guys tied that record, but you did not break our record.
Doesn't feel like it, does it? It feels like it was just yesterday.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. You know, 5 of us to graduate from OSU. Justin, our son, mechanical engineer for Boeing, was the last one. Chris would sit in the bleachers studying pharmacy. He was a pharmacist, retired now, in those bleachers and watch us practice. And I remember going, man, you know, Corvallis almost, Legion Field is almost as nice as OSU's back then. But man, I'll tell you, you know, the cool stuff, the things that happened, you guys are talking about. Coach Riley was fiery coach. Him and Bobo, the big, the head butting incident during the game. I was there when that happened. I can't even remember. It's so long ago. I know that all the teams just emptied the benches, but I don't remember, you know, how much of a fight was ensued after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the great history. Watching Coach Miller, Gary Payton, Sandy Sendega was you know, he was in charge of everybody for all the medical stuff, and GP Senior, and Coach Miller. You know, I got to take a class from him, got to know him really well. People saw how grumpy he was. He really, I'd ask him questions. I spent 20 minutes after practice just talking basketball with him. And then go to practice. He'd look around. You know, nobody was at practice in those days and were allowed to. I had an all key because of baseball. I had an all key to Gil. I'd go up, go to practice. I'd be sitting up there. He'd turn around and look. He'd look at me and raise the one little one finger thing, kind of nod his head, kind of smile at me.
Yeah.
So what else is on your mind, Mike? You said you had two things.
Well, the other thing was, you're talking about analytics. And, of course, when I was playing, there wasn't really any analytics. It was all just, stuff that are going. A couple things. One, analytics. I was over at the hitting facility last week, and the analytics that these guys got, the stuff that we're doing in baseball, is mind-boggling. My background is exercise sports science, and it's unbelievable. And I don't know if you guys know, but in football, all the players have a little unit that fits in the back of your shoulder pads,
mm-hmm.
and it sits in the back, and they analyze everything from where you're running to how far you go, how fast you go, and especially hits. And it used to be back when I was staying at Western Oregon and transferred to Oregon State, if you got hit really bad, you kind of as a player you just tried to tough it out. Oh no, I'm fine. You got to try to get away with it. Where now those guys, they know when you get hit how much force,
mm-hmm.
what trauma force there is by going through these little monitors on each player.
Yeah.
And, I'm with you guys. I was kind of old school at first, but I'll tell you what, it's unbelievable. Now especially in practice, when you go to catch a ball, as a wide receiver, when you go up to get a ball and you're in the air and you come up and you either catch it or not, you come back. The worst part for me was getting your head snapped back on the turf. And that would ring your bell almost worse than anything.
Yeah.
So now those guys can follow the players and they know exactly how much.
Some of that analytic stuff is really good. Mike, thanks for calling in. We got to move along. But again, call in again later in the week. And boy, he's right about snapping your head and hitting the turf and some things like that. I want to get to some texts that we got. Got an interesting one here. It's a text that a person or whatever, TBM, and it says co-host of the Big Mountain Podcast. So it can be anybody. I don't know who that is.
I know who that dude is.
Okay, well,
he looks like he should be on radio like us.
He says, UNLV, a real possibility for the Pac. TBM provides another at Pac-12 editions update, this time looking closer at UNLV athletics. This is on his site or whatever. We were first to drop Texas State Bobcats negotiations. Now we inform you UNLV is also in ongoing discussions with the Pac. Now, I don't know about that. It's all speculation, or maybe they have inside information. But I will say that even though, first of all, UNLV was never invited the first time. It was just kind of put out there in the media that they were. They weren't. But they said, we're sticking with the Mountain West, even though there was no formal invite. But that's kind of, I guess it was their way of saying, hey, don't worry about it. Don't come after us. We're going with the Mountain West. So they remain viable for, a follow-up offer, if you will. So if this were true, you could say, well, wait, I thought they said they were going to the Mountain West. Well, they could have changed their mind. So I appreciate the text from the listener. Cameron Brink was the name of the
Cameron girl. Brink, yes.
That we neither
she's
of us on,
she's
remember.
Also on a New Balance commercial or some commercial. She just has a little cameo where they're kind of zipping the ball around or something.
Yeah, good
like that.
For her. Good for her. She's making money. Take advantage of it. But that's interesting about UNLV.
Well, I would say I've always said on this show about whatever is going on with the Mountain West, we need to settle that.
Yeah.
Taking UNLV from them probably won't settle it. But all things considered, I would rather have, add as your final two, UNLV and Texas State than Memphis and Tulane. And
preferably, yes.
To
keep it regional.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they didn't offer UNLV in the first place, but I know they have some financial problems, but, big market. They're actually making an effort now to be good in football.
Mm-hmm.
So, but is the Mountain West going to let UNLV go? I mean, maybe this is saying that they're going to be a settlement in both those suits and that all the money that the Mountain West promised UNLV and Air Force to stay isn't there.
Yeah, that was the other issue.
So who knows? But
that was the other issue. In fact, when we were talking about this, long time ago, but you know, this money, all this money that the Mountain West is perhaps offering these other schools to stay there, might not be there.
Might not be there. So
that could be
in a perfect world. Yes, UNLV would be a nice addition to the new Pac-12.
Bob Keith writes in and says, Kiki Anafin?
Yeah, the one that transferred. Anafin
from Stanford went to USC.
Oh, okay.
Doug from Salem, Dear Joe Beaver Show, the Beavers football team just got a running back named Bell from Lake O. Hope John was not guilty of tampering. I don't have any connections there other than my dad still lives there.
I wonder if his name's Ricky. That would be great. Hey, Ricky Bell.
Yeah.
Remember him?
I do remember him. That was from today. Was this one from today? No, that was last week. Okay, thank you, Doug. We'll have to look that up and see who that is. Jeff was the one who gave us that link. Okay, thanks, Jeff, for that. And there was another one that I wanted to read. I think that's it. I think we got them all in as far as getting everybody caught up. Bob Keith wrote in earlier and said that Steve Prefontaine would be 74 now. Holy cow.
Still probably be faster than both of us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That is amazing. You know, the other school aside, I don't care about rivalries when it comes to greatness. I love track and field, and I grew up as a real youngster, 10 years old when he died, in fact. But there was a neighbor son going to Oregon at the time. That's how I found out about that. My brother eventually went to Oregon. He was a few years behind that neighbor. So he was there in the 70s when the whole thing was going down. And just an incredible story and very well portrayed. Again, I know it's an Oregon thing, but very well portrayed in the movie Without Limits with Donald Sutherland playing Bill Bowerman.
Is that the one with Billy Crudup?
Yes. Is
Steve Prefontaine?
There's two that were made. That one is the best.
Yeah, Billy Crudup's really good. He was in. He's the dude in Almost Famous too. Wasn't he?
Yeah,
I think he was in Almost Famous.
He was on
Apple. Yeah, mm-hmm. Billy Crudup is good.
So, you know, if you're looking for a fun movie, it's true and it's good and it's all filmed, it looks like, at Oregon's. You got, you know, the old Hayward Field and whatnot. But a little slice of Nike and Doc Bowerman gets chided by his wife, literally, because they show him using her waffle iron. And it's kind of the quiet beginnings. And there's an interesting speech that he gives Prefontaine when he first goes inside of Mac Court and he's a freshman. And Bowerman's kind of behind this draping thing in the locker room as if he's the great wizard. And where's this great wizard, Bowerman?
All-powerful
Oz. So he's kind of looking around asking the other guys, and they're not saying anything to him. And he's saying, well, where's Bowerman? Well, and then they were trying to scare him and everything. So he's supposed to go into this booth behind this curtain. And it's Bowerman out down on the ground measuring everybody's feet because he wants to get the perfect shoe for them. And he gives them this really interesting long little monologue about if you take like so many ounces off of a shoe and you calculate it by how many times you run around it. It totals, you know, the way he does it, of course, it's waxing poetic, which I can't do here, but it you know, comes to like 13 pounds less in a race than your opponents. The writing is perfect. And it does take you back to the beginnings of the whole thing. And, you know, just being an Oregonian, it's pretty cool. It's a really good movie. Anyway, 74 years old. My goodness. All right, tonight, women's basketball against Washington State. Not a good result. The first time the two teams played, but it is a home game, Gil. We will have it on 1240 Joe Radio. In fact, Thursday's game is on Joe, and so is Saturday's. The men play at Gonzaga tomorrow. That'll be on Joe at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, 7:30 airtime. And we'll have Roxy Bernstein on the program tomorrow, along with Mike Parker. And as Mike texted me for the end of the week, no show on Wednesday, but for the end of the week, who did I say? Kennedy Schuler and Drew Rasmussen. Rasmussen on Thursday, Schuler on Friday. And Drew was just most recently at the Diamond Club, the Diamond Dinner, rather. Last Friday, I think it was.
Yes. So where do the men play this weekend?
They don't. They don't play until a week from Thursday.
So Monday night at Gonzaga.
Tuesday at Gonzaga, and then off until the following Thursday.
Wow, that's really weird.
Yeah, really weird. It's been crazy scheduling in the West Coast Conference.
Well, beats the alternative, though, which we didn't really have much, so.
That's right. And I'm looking forward to baseball for a number of reasons, obviously. But one of the things that I'm looking forward to is getting some cred for being great, playing great teams, winning, of course, and being an independent.
Yeah.
And showing the world, look what you did to us, and yet here we are. We're still going to be good.
2.5 weeks, I'll be in surprise, too. We're heading down on February 12th, Wednesday morning.
So you'll be there for the season opener.
Yes, looking forward to it.
All right, Josh Worden will be on the call. Josh texted in. I haven't heard from Josh in a while. Do you remember a high school football broadcast around 2018 when your car broke down? Yes, on Highland going to Crescent Valley. I forget if I ended up driving us there, but the show went on. Josh took over for me that night, and I needed to get a new car, and now I got to do it again. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.